Chapter 2. The Conflict Within. In 1986, not long after I challenged the assumptions behind that exam question at Caltech, I had a career-changing aha moment during a biochemistry lecture. Earlier, as an engineering student at Berkeley, I had learned about something called a feedback loop. The basic idea is simple, though considerable ingenuity is often needed to implement it effectively. Consider a familiar example, the thermostat used to control the temperature in your home. Factors like the weather outside or your cooking a meal inside often work against your aim of keeping the house at a comfortable temperature. The job of the thermostat is to counteract those disturbances by constantly measuring the indoor temperature and activating the heating or air conditioning as needed. So the measured temperature is used as real-time information, feedback, by an automatic decision maker, the thermostat, to control the very thing that is being measured, the temperature. As straightforward as that sounds, it becomes much more complicated when highly active and complex processes must be kept under control. Knowing that the chemistry occurring inside growing cells is just that, highly active and complex. I was astonished when my biochemistry instructor revealed the elegance of the automatic decision makers working on the molecular scale to keep the various chemicals of life at the right levels. The connection to engineering was so strikingly and delightfully obvious to me that I felt laughter well up. As if anticipating my reaction, the instructor was quick to attribute these ingenious molecular decision makers to unguided evolutionary processes. His message was clear. However remarkable these molecular control systems may be, they should be considered nothing more than natural accidents, just like everything else in biology. Huh? I didn't believe him. I knew, intuitively anyway, that no string of accidents could possibly be so clever. At the same time, I sensed the weight of scientific authority standing with his interpretation and against mine. Notice I use the word authority here instead of evidence. He was the professor, I was the student. He could have filled the room with distinguished colleagues who agreed with his view, whereas I didn't even know any students who agreed with mine. And yet, for all the claims I had heard in lectures and read in textbooks about the inventive power of Darwin's evolutionary process, I hadn't seen a convincing scientific basis for these claims. As far as I knew, no one had shown how the amazing things of life could be accidental inventions instead of deliberate ones. I was aware, of course, of the mountains of books and technical papers in which the facts of biology were interpreted through the lens of evolution, and I knew that many people perceived this huge body of literature as the very documented evidence I was seeking. I, however, saw this mountain only as confirmation, if anywhere needed, that the evolutionary lens was dominant in the life sciences. After all, countless ideas have gained large followings and generated piles of books, but no one is naive enough to think that all of these ideas must therefore be true. No, I was after evidence of another kind, the kind with the power to persuade people who aren't initially in agreement. Nothing in that mountain of evolutionary literature seemed to be that. Nothing took the view of Darwin doubters seriously. I knew this because I was one.